Well, open your Bibles with me to Genesis chapter 2. And I say that with an intended emphasis. Whenever we get into a new chapter, I feel like we've really accomplished something because of how difficult some passages are and how long it takes to work through them in a very intentional way, in a very thoughtful way. So our study of the creative work of God is completed. We've looked at days 1 through 6 in great detail. In these 6 days of creation, God created all physical matter that ever will be. The first 3 days of creation were concerned with forming the earth. The final 3 days of creation were concerned with filling the earth. And that act was finalized with the crown jewel of creation, humanity, mankind, you and I today. So we find in verse 131 the summarization of the creative work of God. And it says here, God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. And so all that God had made was worthy of praise. It was complete. It was perfect. It was without fault. There was no deficiency. There was no need for anything else. He gave it his very highest commendation by saying only here in the creation narrative that it was very good. So in our study today, we're going to take a look at the seventh day, the final day of creation week, where God does not create anything, but instead he rests. The seventh day is significantly different from the first 6 days of creation, and I'll run through these very, very quickly. If you want these enumerated later on, I'll be more than glad to give that to you. So first of all, there's no creation formula where we would read before, and God said, as in the previous 6 days of creation, because his creative work was not required. After all, he had finished. Secondly, the seventh day did not have the usual closing, and there was evening and there was morning to indicate the end of that day. Thirdly, the seventh day was the only day to be blessed and made holy by God, which we'll take a look at in greater detail just in just a few minutes. Fourthly, the seventh day has no corresponding parallel in the other days as the previous 6 days of creation did. So, for example, day one, where God created light, on day four, he created the luminaries, and both of those would separate light from darkness. On day two, he created the atmosphere by separating the waters from the water. And on day five, he put creatures, birds, in the atmosphere that was created on day two. Then on day three, he called from beneath the water on the earth the land mass, caused vegetation to grow. The parallel on day six, when God created the land creatures, the animals who roam the face of the earth, and man, who would now be fed by the vegetation that sprouted on day three. So fifthly and finally, unlike the 6 creative days, the number of the day, the seventh day, is repeated here 3 times, or is not repeated in any other day of creation. So let's look together. Genesis 2, verses 1 through 3. And see what God's Word says to us today. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed and all their host. By the seventh day God completed his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. Now as you read through these 3 verses together, it feels like there's a lot of repetition, and you're right, there is. This is called parallelism in Hebrew writing. Oh, I put those up for you. No, I didn't. I'm sorry. There's supposed to be something first. Day 7. So this parallelism that is in these verses is a literary structure that is designed to enhance or to emphasize something that is being said. And so this is exactly what Moses does here in the repetition and the parallelism that we're going to find in these 3 verses. So some argue that verse 1 here, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their hosts. Some would argue that this should actually be chapter 1, verse 32, because it summarizes the first 6 days of creation. Others see this simply as an introduction to this seventh day, as a day of rest. But what we need to remember is this, is that in the original texts of the Bible, there are no chapter and verse given. These are supplied by translators who do their very best to keep ideas together. And so through the ages, translators have believed that chapter 2, verse 1 fits best with the seventh day than it did with chapter 1 in the sixth day. So although God rests on the seventh day, there is great importance in this day, which is likely why the summarization is here. Now verses 2 and 3 contain four lines called parallelism. The first three each emphasize the same thing. They possess seven words in the original Hebrew language. So if you were to read this in Hebrew, each of verses 2 and 3 would have exactly seven words. That parallelism is very intentional here. And the center of each of those three lines is the seventh day. So the parallelism, where the idea is repeated, the seventh day being at the center of each of those verses, highlights the overall importance of this seventh day. It's not just a day where God said, that was a lot of work. I'm done now. I'm going to sit back and kick on my heels and just kind of watch what I've created. That's not at all what is intended for us to take out of the parallelism that is arranged for us in these two verses. So a literal translation displays this parallel structure, and here's what line one looks like. So God finished by the seventh day his work which he did. Now in the Hebrew that's seven words, in our English it's not. Line two, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he did. And then line three, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. And then line four, because on it he rested from all his work that God created to do. That is a literal translation of the Hebrew. It gets repackaged in the English, but if you were to look at this in Hebrew, you would see seven words with the seventh day being at the center of each of these lines. Now, it's not numerology. It, again, is a literary structure called parallelism to emphasize the significance that Moses wanted for us to get out of this seventh day. There's great theological significance here, not only for the Israelite, but for us today. So in later Israel, the seventh day that we see repeated here is replaced with the customary word Sabbath, or the Sabbath day, and its ritual observance became the preeminent sign of God's covenant with Israel. We're going to look at that a little bit later. So the seventh day stands apart as the crown to the 6 days of creation. From the very beginning, creation had the seventh day as its center point, not only in creation, but ultimately as an important part of the destiny for God's people, as we're going to explore and look at as we go through these verses together. Now, day seven tells us three important things in this passage. Number one, God rests. So, to join it together, verses 2 and 3 each state that God rested. Verse 2 says, he rested from all his work. And then verse 3 adds, he rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So the question is, why did God rest? Well, he wasn't tired. He didn't have a long week, a bad week, a difficult week. He was not fatigued. The omnipotent, all-powerful God needs no rest, because regardless of the amount of power that goes forth from him, his omnipotent creating power is infinite, and his power is not depleted one tiny bit as the result of his creative work. So God wasn't tired. He didn't need a break. He wasn't fatigued as you and I would get fatigued on a very, very busy week where we are just drained from all of our physical strength. God was not tired and did not need a breather. So that word rest actually means to cease from. So when it says that God rested, what it really means is that God ceased from his creative work. God simply stopped his creating activity because it was completed. It was finished. There was nothing left to create. As I already said, All physical matter that ever was created in these first 6 days of creation. Now, when some people read this terminology that God rested, it creates the idea of God resting and implies to some that he simply quit working, as if God retired. Like God created the universe and wound it up like a great big clock and just let it run out. Well, that's not at all what God did. God did not quit working. God ceased from the creative work that he engaged himself in these first 6 days of creation. So although God rested or ceased in his creating activity, he still worked. He just didn't continue to create. Jesus said exactly the same thing when he healed a crippled man on the Sabbath. It says in John 5:17, "My Father is working until now," indicating that God continued to work even in the time of Jesus' earthly ministry. And Jesus says, "And I myself am working." So God rested from the work of creation, but continues to work in sustaining the world by his power and by governing it in his providence. So as you think about the idea that God rested, he only ceased from continuing to create. But God has continued to work and even works in our day and age today. The reality is this: if God stopped working, everything, all physical matter, the universe that our solar system lives in, would all dissolve into nothing. If God did not continue to sustain the universe that he created, it would destroy itself and be done. Imagine, if you can, a very poor analogy, that the entirety of the universe is spinning on the finger of God like a basketball player spins a basketball. As soon as that finger is pulled away, that basketball falls to the ground. That is exactly what would happen if God ceased from working. The universe and everything in it would dissolve into nothing. The idea here is that God's rest was one of deep pleasure and satisfaction at the fruit of his labor. He sits back and admires the handiwork of his creation, and he enjoys it. The joyous rest of the Creator was extended to Adam and Eve in paradise, or in the Garden of Eden. In their state of innocence, they lived in a blessed peace with their Creator. We'll talk a lot more about this when we get into chapter 3. And this original rest was the beginning of a type of rest that was lost in the fall, but will one day be restored through redemption and salvation's final consummation. Now that might sound a little snappy, but it's really, really, really important in that God rested on the seventh day. He imparted that rest to Adam and Eve in the garden. That rest was disturbed through the fall of man and has been disrupted and will continue to be disrupted until the consummation of the salvation of the people of God. All of that is wound up here in the supremacy of day seven and what Moses wants us to understand, and which we will flesh out here in just a minute. So let me repeat that. The original rest was at the beginning. It was lost at the fall, but will one day be restored through redemption and salvation's final consummation. Second important point that we see here, not only that God rested, but God blessed. Verse 3 says, "And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." God took such great pleasure in the seventh day that he blessed it. And when God blessed the seventh day, he made it spiritually fruitful. Now, we'll look at that in greater detail here in just a second. Now, this is the third blessing in the week of creation. The first was on the living creatures. The second was on Adam and Eve. And in both instances, the blessing was followed by the command to be fruitful and to multiply. So it is implied here with this third blessing, having joined to it that God sanctified the seventh day, that there is to be a fruitful spiritual multiplication that takes place as a result of this seventh day. So the meaning is essentially the same and understood in the spiritual realm, since the term sanctification has been added to the blessing that God assigned to the seventh day. Now, this is very brief because it really leads into this third thing that we learn here, and that is God sanctified. He rested, He blessed, and He sanctified. So when God sanctified the day, He declared that the day was holy, and we know that holy isn't assigned to a state of superior spirituality, but holy means to be set apart. So the seventh day is a day separated from the other 6 days, a day that is especially devoted to God. That is the importance of the seventh day. It's what is to be understood as God resting, as God blessing it, and now God sanctifying this seventh day. As was mentioned earlier, in later Israel, the seventh day was changed to the Sabbath day, a day of rest and a day of devotion to the Lord. Now, do you think it's a coincidence that this day of rest just kind of accidentally got changed to the seventh day in the nation of Israel's experience and in their worship pattern? Absolutely not. It was intended, and this is exactly what God does, as we're going to look at here in just a second. Now, very, very quickly, there's no mention of the observance of the Sabbath day for Adam and for Eve. It's not until God commanded the Sabbath day to the nation of Israel through Moses in the giving of the 10 words or the 10 commandments. This is what we find here in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11, with the inauguration of the Sabbath day coinciding with the seventh day as a day of rest. God says to Moses, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Hear it? 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So what God initiated as the day of rest in the creation narrative, He punctuates with an exclamation point in the giving of the 10 words to the nation of Israel. This seventh day is a holy day set apart for me, and in it you shall not work. It is a day devoted to me, and you are to set your attention on me and on me alone. So the Sabbath day is to be one of complete rest, to cease from life's labors, and to devote yourself to the Lord. Now we'll see 3 things here that gets fleshed out in the Sabbath day, inaugurated in creation, but actually begun here in the giving of the 10 words. So the way the Israelite, and also for us today, are to emphasize the importance of this day of rest is in letter A, creation celebrated. By keeping the Sabbath, God's people entered into the 7-day rhythm of work and rest. Although God only created in 6 days and rested on the seventh and did not repeat that cycle over and over and over, the rhythm of creating in 6 days and then resting on the seventh is now implied through this pattern that is given to the Israelites. In 6 days you do all your work, and on the seventh you're going to rest. The seventh day pointed the Hebrew worshiper to a day of rejoicing over the created work of God. Now, there's a Jewish theologian by the name of Abraham Heschel, whose work I came across in my study, and here's what he says. It is a day on which, the seventh day, the Sabbath day, it is a day on which we are called upon to show what is eternal in time, to turn from the results of creation to the mystery of creation, from the world of creation to the creation of the world. So as humanity looks upon the world that God has created and the one who has created the world, the idea is we are to focus our attention, our devotion, and celebrating the power, the wisdom, the might, and the glory of what God has created. The Sabbath implicitly instructed to all humanity that there is more to life than work. What would happen to humanity, especially God's people, if there was no idea of a sacred day set apart for the Lord? Would we feel compelled to work 7 days until our bodies physically gave out and we were prescribed rest by a doctor? Is that what we would do? Do you know there are many, many people in our world who have climbed the highest in the corporate ladder and achieved a pinnacle of success that is matched by few, and they do so by working 12 to 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they get to be 55 and they die from exhaustion. And in the process, they've lost their family, they've lost their friends, all they have, all they know is work. It becomes the be-all, end-all of life. This is never what God wanted His people to understand about these lives that we live. So this Sabbath day, this seventh day, affords God's people the time to hear and meditate on God's Word, to contemplate eternal things, and to pray. Isaiah tells us in Isaiah 58, 13 and 14, if because of the Sabbath you turn your foot from doing your own pleasure on my holy day and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and honor it, desisting from your own ways, from seeking your own pleasure and speaking your own word, then you will take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Even in the days of Isaiah, hundreds of years after the command to rest was given, after many, many generations of Israelites forsook the holy sacredness of the seventh day, it was still important to emphasize this as a way of reclaiming and recapturing the sacredness of the seventh day and to refocus on the commands of the Lord. Letter B, as we get from the Sabbath day, is redemption is to be celebrated. Now for Israel, the Sabbath was also a day to remember and celebrate redemption. Now we know this because in the book of Deuteronomy, where Moses expands upon the fourth command, he says this in Deuteronomy 5:15, "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath." You see that? It's entwined in the Sabbath day that you not only devote your attention on the God of creation, but you also celebrate redemption as a people who were let free from this 430-year period of slavery to the nation of Egypt, and you celebrate my deliverance, my redemption for you as a people. So in Egypt, Israel had been cruelly overworked, even forced to make bricks without straw, which is an incredibly difficult task, especially in the ancient world. Pharaoh only let them go when God wrought his mighty deliverance at the Passover. And so the Passover, as the holiest of all days, is a celebration of redemption. And the redemption that is to be celebrated is a regular part of their Sabbath celebration. With redemption from Egypt came the rest that they had not known for hundreds of years. And so on the Sabbath, as they rested, they were to reflect on the miraculous act of redemption celebrated through the deliverance and the crossing of the Red Sea. So when you take the instruction of the fourth command found in Exodus and in Deuteronomy, the commandment gave a twofold meaning of the seventh day for Israel. One, the celebration of God as creator, and two, the celebration of God as redeemer. So the Sabbath's purpose was to bless God's people, to bless their bodies with the rest of the Genesis rhythm, and to bless their souls and their physical being with heaven's rhythm, providing Israel with relief from their work so they could focus on God and gratefully celebrate Him as their creator and their redeemer. Now the third thing that we see here in the Sabbath is, letter C, covenant celebrated. The Sabbath in its ritual observance became the preeminent sign of God's covenant with Israel. Therefore, every time they observed a seventh day, there was a celebration of the covenant that God made with them as His people. After the tabernacle was built, the Sabbath was regarded as the sign of the covenant between God and His people. And here's what we read in Exodus chapter 31. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, 'You shall surely observe my Sabbath, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you.'" Did you know this? There is no other people in all of the world that has a Sabbath. None. It is a unique day set apart by God for His people, apart from any other people group in all of humanity. It is enforced because of its significance with the threat of death should one fail to observe it. We read this as we continue in Exodus 31, 14 and 15. "Therefore you are to observe the Sabbath, for it is holy to you, a day to be set apart. Everyone who profanes it or ignores it, doesn't observe it, shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death." Now God is not taking attendance in the sense that He looks down and He checks off and says, "I shall smite thee." What it indicates is that those who ignore and disregard the Sabbath day as a holy day, a day devoted to the Lord, what are they actually doing? They are ignoring the Lord of the Sabbath. They are in effect saying, "I don't recognize you as the creator of this world. I don't recognize you as one whose redemption is worthy of being celebrated. I am going to live a life for myself, to myself, by myself. I don't want God. I don't need God." And although in the life of the Israelite there is this actual threat of physical death, make no mistake about it, those in the spiritual world today who disregard the holiness of a Sabbath day, a day of rest, a day of worship, they disregard the God of creation and the Creator who brought about our redemption, and they say spiritually, "I don't need God, I don't want God," and the due course of that life is one that is set apart from God's redemption, the end of which will be an eternal separation from God. God meant for His people to be wholly His, and He allowed them the opportunity to recommit, to reacquaint themselves with who He is through the prescription of this day of rest. So the Sabbath persisted through the centuries as a covenantal sign of grace between God and His people. The rest of the Sabbath gave God's people time to reflect on who He is and what He has done. So as they and we look up at the stars, we see the eternal power in God's creative work. As they rested, as we rest, we are to be reminded that the Creator has redeemed them from a physical slavery and redeemed us from a spiritual slavery of sin and set us free through the finished work of Christ on the cross. As they rested and as we rest, we are to remember the covenant that God has made. And we did that today through the observance of communion. You know, when we observe communion together, when we see the elements, the bread and the juice, it is a reminder of the covenant that God made with us at the cross. That we are saved by grace through faith and that not of ourselves. It is the gift of God. That we have been joined to Him. We are in union with Christ, never to be separated, not in physical death, not in any way. And so when we gather together on a Sunday morning, it is a day to remember the God of creation. It is a day to remember the God of redemption. It is a day to remember the God of covenant. The more we rest in those truths, the more physical and spiritual rest we will enjoy in this life. Would you pray with me, please?